followed by an interactive Q&A started out by myself. I'm Jim Suva, the IT hardware and technology supply chain analyst here at Citi. Following our informal Q&A up here on the stage, we're going to open it up for some investor time for questions and answers. We do ask for you to wait for the microphone, as this is being webcast, and so others can also hear you, but there will be ample time, so please have your questions prepared. On stage with me is David Goulden, the President, Chief Operating Officer, and Chief Financial Officer of EMC. Without further ado, I'd like to turn it over to David.
Jim, thank you. Good morning. Thank you for so many of you for joining us on day three. The purpose here is to try and make the session interactive, but I thought that a number of you may be relatively new to EMC, so I thought I'd just spend a few minutes talking to you a little bit about the market opportunity that we see in front of ourselves and how we're positioned to really capitalize upon that market opportunity. So if we will, we'll just move through a few slides, and I'll make just a comment for just a few minutes. So the key thing that we are looking at, and of course a lot of people in the industry are talking about it right now, are these waves of change. And everybody's heard of the latest wave of change. We're probably 2 years into what's going to be a 10-year wave of change towards cloud computing. And I'll talk more about this. I think the key point is that each of these waves has created innovation, it's created winners and losers, and it's actually created new opportunities. And each wave has actually been larger than the last one. So we're all looking at this new wave of cloud computing, about which there's actually a fair amount of confusion. Because a number of people, when they talk about cloud computing, move towards the concept that everything's going to move to the public cloud. And there's a big debate as to what the model's going to look like once this cloud wave is fully deployed. Are people going to have private clouds? Are people going to have public clouds? Which one is going to win? We believe very strongly that both of these are going to have an important place in the future. There will be hundreds of thousands of private clouds in large and medium companies as they transition their existing data centers into flexible cloud computing resources for their applications. And there'll also be thousands of public clouds, some focused upon infrastructure, some focused upon application, some focused upon individual development environments. And in practice, there's going to be both. And of course, as you see on the right-hand side of the slide, EMC and VMware are working with many, many of these public cloud providers who are building trusted clouds based upon our hardware and software architectures. And it's going to be the applications that decide what sits on a public cloud versus what sits on a private cloud. Now, to make this example go one step further, it's not going to be just about these two separately. The key point is going to be that most enterprises are going to use a combination of both. And the combination of both is what we call the hybrid cloud, where some applications will be on the private cloud, some applications will be on public clouds, and IT departments will increasingly be responsible for being the orchestrators of this new environment. The end users don't need to know where the application is running. IT needs to become the service broker inside the company, which is a major transformation for the role of IT departments. Now, obviously, a lot of this transformation we're talking about is happening at the infrastructure. And there's a lot of conversation about how the infrastructure is changing towards cloud computing. But I also wanted to point out that this transformation not only impacts infrastructure, it impacts applications. There are new waves and new generations of applications being built, a number of which are driving this thing called big data, which I'll come back to. And there's also a complete change in the client model, the days when IT can specify a single device that all the consumers in the industry or the company will use have gone. And there's a proliferation of new devices out there, so client access is an important part of this transformation. The point I want to make here is that in the first time, I believe, in the history of the IT industry, we're seeing simultaneous transformation at a major scale of infrastructure, of applications, and of clients all at the same time. And of course, what this also does is this also is changing the paradigm for two very other important pieces of technology, security management, because security management also needs to change in this cloud era to respond to virtualized and flexible infrastructure, new applications, and new users and client devices. Now, EMC has taken a very pragmatic and quite a unique approach to helping customers move, first of all, to re-transform their cloud infrastructure, whether it being a private cloud or a public cloud. We have and continue to offer best-of-breed products. A lot of our customers choose to build their own cloud architecture with our hardware, our software, from our toolkit, basically think of they're taking the ingredients from us and they're building their own clouds. A couple of years ago, we introduced a very powerful concept with a joint venture company between ourselves and Cisco called VCE, where we introduced basically a cloud in a box called the V-Block. It is a fully baked, pre-built converged infrastructure where essentially we've built the entire cloud environment for you. You roll it in, you start loading applications the same day. This has been a huge success, and we're on track to reach $1 billion run rate in the next few quarters from this business. Now, what we've also introduced recently is another set of ways to build the cloud, which is becoming very popular as well, which is basically proven infrastructure recipes, things that we call vSpecs. This allows our partners to basically build clouds flexibly using our hardware and software, but their choice of servers, their choice of operating system, their choice of virtualization layer, and basically have an EMC-certified solution our partners can take with a lot of flexibility. These three approaches to helping customers build their cloud infrastructure, the combination of these three is still unique in the industry from any one player. Now, I know there's going to be a lot of questions about flash technology, so I thought I'd just put one slide in my comments up front and talk about our approach to a flash. Flash, or solid-state memory, is obviously a new media. It's very fast. It's still expensive. It's more than 10 times the price of the comparable disk layer, and that price difference will continue for the foreseeable future, but it's creating a lot of change in the industry. And we believe that flash technology will play at multiple levels in the information infrastructure. There'll be flash technology in the server, just as there's direct disk drives in servers right now. There'll be server network flash technology. There'll be flash technology in the storage network, both in dedicated devices and in hybrid arrays, where there's a combination of flash and storage. And the key point is that we have product plans to play in all these spaces, and we have a software architecture that ties it all together. So customers can plan a data strategy where there's connectivity and intelligence between all these different layers, and the applications and data can take advantage of the right tier and the right performance level at the right price. And again, it's unique because not only we're not just competing in one of these sectors, as most of our competitors are, we're trying to provide a complete information infrastructure that incorporates flash technologies. Security is something that is going to change. I mentioned this briefly. The traditional way of securing things was to basically bolt a firewall to your server, put antivirus in the desktop, and that was the old way of doing security. In the dynamic new world where everything is virtualized and applications and data are moving, you have to have different approaches. A lot of the physical security devices need to become virtualized. Customers need to spend much more time on understanding the threat environment and analyzing threats that are occurring, and then planning remediation in this new virtualized world. So there'll be a sea change of technologies in security in the virtualized world, another key part of our strategy through RSA. I mentioned big data. There's a lot talked about big data. You can read the definition. You know, big data are data sets that are so big and so new, and they're measured in petabytes. They break a traditional IT infrastructure that's just so big. And again, we have an end-to-end strategy for big data. We've invested in petabyte scale big data storage architecture through our Scale-On Isilon family. We have, through the Greenplum acquisition, structured and unstructured Hadoop databases to run on top of that. We have an analytics platform to help data scientists collaborate around big data. And we have the leading software development company, Pivotal Labs, that helps customers rapidly build these new big data applications. So again, we're taking an end-to-end approach to the big data opportunity. So let me summarize by pulling all the pieces back together. When you think of the new world, we believe that information is going to be at the center of this new world. Really, information is the most important asset that a company has beyond their people. And in order to manage information, you, of course, need to have information storage. There are multiple different applications, so you need multiple types of storage. You need to protect that through backup recovery architectures. And you need to be able to secure the information itself. Then on top of that, through VMware, we are building out a cloud operating system, not just virtualization, but a complete data center virtualization framework for clouds, private clouds, and public clouds. So people can then virtualize their applications, their existing applications, their new big data analytics applications, and people can work in this new environment with a multitude of different devices where our identity security part of our strategy fits in. So hopefully you can see kind of how the different parts of our portfolio address the opportunity through cloud, big data, and trust. If I can just kind of walk you through a little bit of our history, in 2002, we were a $5 billion company. In 2011, we were a $20 billion company. We moved from a storage company to a cloud big data and trust company. You can see we invested about $27 billion on technology over that period of time, so an impressive investment portfolio. Roughly 50% of that spend was R&D, 50% was M&A. The key point, we've been able to do both very successfully and integrate them into our strategy. And this has really been critical to driving our change and positioning us for the future. So in summary, we think we're in a better position than we've ever been in the company's history. We think our vision and strategy are spot on. Our customers are very excited about what we're doing with them. The level of conversation we're having with customers become increasingly strategic. We think we've got the team, the resources, the technology, the financial strength, and the roadmap to continue to innovate, continue to grow faster than our markets. So with that, thank you, and now we can move to Q&A.
Thank you very much, David. That was a great overview, and as you promised, a lot of time now for interactive Q&A. Maybe if we can start things off by talking about the big picture, demand. So far, this is the third day of our Citi Technology Conference. Many companies have said things haven't been getting materially worse, things haven't been materially getting better. We're just kind of chugging along here. But then last night there was some news by a company, OCZ, that pre-announced materially lower than expected flash storage revenues and things like that. It appears, if I didn't read it correctly, that it was more supply rather than demand-oriented. And you, as chief operating officer, I'm sure you've got to keep a close eye on your supply chain, making sure you're getting the right components at the right time, at the right location, to be able to roll things out correctly. Can you maybe just give us an update on the current demand environment for your products? Maybe let's take it in, you know, chunks of second half of the year versus first half of the year. And are you seeing any disruptions, any softening, any weakening, any catalysts? Just update us on the big demand picture for your company there at EMC.
Sure. Let's start off with that. Jim, we have a by policy. We're not going to do any mid-quarter updates, but I can talk to you about what we talked about in July and put that into context, because we talked about what we saw in the first half. We also kind of point you towards the second half as well. What we saw, and the real comparison point would be between where we were sitting in January and then April versus where we were in July. And perhaps I can best characterize in terms of what we see and what we saw IT spending growth in aggregate being for the year. So when we came into the year and when we were in April, we said we thought that IT spending growth was going to be in the 3-4% range for the year, and possibly towards the higher end of that range was our update in April. And we saw things slowing down a little bit. When we got to July, we said we now think that IT spending growth is going to be near a 3% or possibly a tick less. So it's not as if we've seen it going from a positive to a negative. We've seen it going from, you know, what was, you know, strongish or, you know, mediumish single-digit growth to, you know, now lower single-digit growth, but still a growing IT environment. And the important thing is, per the comments I made here, you know, the markets that we serve, storage, virtualization, security, are still going to grow faster than the IT average. So even though we've seen a downtick, you know, we think our markets are in pretty good shape.
Great. And then if we think about the world in various geographic locations physically, maybe by region, can you talk about maybe various regions that may be stronger versus softer, one part of the world versus the other, and maybe just the major continents, so to speak?
Yes, again, let me kind of go back to our own experience and our own numbers as the benchmark there. So in the second quarter, we saw strong growth in both the Americas and Asia-Pac. In fact, they're both up 15%. You know, Europe was basically flattish for us. In constant currency, it was actually up 5%, but obviously much lower growth rate than we saw in the other two geographies. But then again, there's still a tale of two cities. We saw fairly decent growth in Northern Europe, but of course in the Southern European economies where there's most challenge, we did see, you know, a bigger decline in spend there, hence the kind of flattish number. But the key thing is that North America and Asia Pac were both pretty robust for us. And again, Europe's not a one-size-fits-all story.
Great. And then you wear multiple hats, both chief operating officer and then chief financial officer. So maybe since we've already talked about the operating side of the business, if we can switch over to the financial side of the business. You're in a position of having strong cash flow and a very good cash position. Can you maybe help us and investors understand better your intended use of the cash and the cash flow, whether it be stock buybacks, acquisitions, how you as Chief Finance Officer look at deploying that cash?
Well, first of all, we have been aggressive over the last few years with stock buybacks. We've spent multiple billions of dollars over the last few years returning them to shareholders via buybacks, and this year we've committed to a $700 million buyback. So we do have a constant program where each year we are spending some of our cash there. Strategically, I think if you look at my penultimate slide, when we talked about spending $12, $13 billion on acquisitions over the last few years, we've been very successful. We've bought some key technologies, including VMware, more recently, Data Domain, Isilon, and we think that's a very good deployment of cash, particularly when we're in this phase of transformation. Relative to our dividends, for us, it's a question of when, not if. We wouldn't want to put a dividend in place to the extent that it constrained our ability to execute our strategic agenda, particularly on the M&A side. But we do believe at some point in time, when we get a sufficient cushion in that cash flow, we will start to introduce a dividend as well.
That's great. Now that you've talked about wearing the CFO hat, if we can switch over to you wearing both the CFO and the COO hat at the same time, and that's running the business as well as the financial side, and maybe taking a look at what are some of the macro factors that you look at for running the business both on an operational and financial side? Is it GDP, employment, worker productivity hours, IT spending budgets as you travel on the airplane and planes and trains and you're reading the newspaper? Any of those particular bigger macro indices that you look at to say, hey, this is interesting, incrementally positive, incrementally negative, what are the bigger factors that you look at when you wear both those hats?
Yeah, I think what we try and do is we try and triangulate back to IT spending growth. Obviously, GDP is a factor, employee levels are a factor, but there's a correlation, but it's not one-to-one. So we try and triangulate back to IT spending growth, and that's our starting point, and then we kind of look at our markets relative to IT spending growth. Because IT spending is driven by a number of things. Customers are going through these huge transformations of their cloud infrastructures right now, which means that IT spending may be driven by different dynamics than just GDP. So that's really our starting point. So we look at indicators, and we spend a lot of time talking to customers about their budgets. What we see happening within IT is that we see people more often than not squeezing their infrastructure budget so they can spend more upon applications. But that's a trend that is, again, facilitated by the infrastructure transformation, by big data, new apps, and then by security. But it really comes back to IT spending.
Which actually folds in well to the next part that we are going to talk about, and that is in an environment of overall flattish growth, things aren't great, but they're not terrible either. It appears that, EMC is still looking at pretty strong growth going ahead. Yet a lot of the expectations are more for flattish overall macro. Can you help us understand the prioritizations when you visit with CTOs about how EMC is actually able to outgrow in that flash environment? Is it redeploying of where they're spending money, and what type of discussions you have with those executives?
I think the place it starts, Jim, and this is a fairly startling data point I came across a couple of weeks ago, it starts with information growth. So in 2000, the entire digital universe produced 2 exabytes of information, according to IDC. Now we're producing more than 2 exabytes a day. So from 2 exabytes a year to 2 exabytes plus a day is huge. So what are CIOs that we talk to struggling with? They're struggling with how they harness this massive amount of information. And that's driving a lot of fundamental spending and fundamental innovation around storage technology, because your IT budget can't possibly grow at the same rate as your information budget. So that's one of the key drivers. Obviously, the virtualization agenda from VMware has a huge ROI. So even in kind of flattish markets, there's a great ROI, short-term payback in terms of virtualizing your servers, consolidating. But now what we find is a lot of customers have done a fair amount of consolidation, and they've kind of got their CapEx savings. Now they're looking to get to OpEx savings. And when you look at IT spending in the data center globally, it's about 50% of it goes on capital, about 50% of it goes on operations and just what it costs you to run a data center. And that's where a lot of the investments in the VMware around the vCloud suite and management plays into place. So, again, I think that most CIOs think they're drinking from the fire hose when it comes to trying to respond to the information growth inside their business. And that really is at the heart of the markets that we play and what's driving our business.
And I think no discussion or interaction with EMC would be complete unless we dive into Flash a little bit.
Let's do that.
You had a brief overview slide that you gave about Flash, but maybe if you can just take us in a little bit more detail, the Flash strategy at EMC.
Sure. So first of all, as I mentioned, we see Flash as a critical technology. It's going to sit alongside spinning media for many, many years. One thing to understand about Flash, a couple of things to understand to help put it into perspective. One, it's very, very fast. Secondly, it's still quite expensive compared to the comparable spinning media. So from a cost per gigabyte perspective, there's a 10x difference. And there will be a 10x difference for many, many years. So you're not going to put Flash everywhere. The second thing to understand about Flash is the industry capacity for Flash is about 5% right now of the industry capacity for spinning drives. And, of course, a lot of that Flash is going into things like your iPhone, et cetera. Now, having said that, it's very strategic and very important because it accelerates the performance of applications enormously. So I talked about our approach. We think you'll see Flash inside servers as direct attached storage, just as you see spinning drives inside servers as direct attached storage. And that's not a market that we're particularly interested in. We focus upon network storage and bringing things together with software. So what we've done in terms of the server Flash is we have built a software engine called VFCache that does caching and dedupe that basically is designed to accelerate the application talking to the array behind it. Also in the server network, we think there are going to be appliances where people don't put their Flash inside the server. They actually connect the server to a server appliance. And we have a project there called Project Thun that will come to market next year that will also have software on it that attaches back to the storage array. And then we think Flash is going to be very important in the storage array in two flavors. One is that over 50% of all our storage arrays that go out right now have a combination of Flash and spinning drives. And the adage is a little Flash goes a long, long way. 2 or 3% Flash capacity can, in some cases, double the performance of a storage array coupled with our fully automated tiering software that moves the hot data to the high-performance media. So what we see happening is a bit of a bifurcation, Flash being very important for the performance applications, and then the lower, deeper, lower cost SATA and ATA drives being used for a lot of the volume and data. And then the final application is there is going to be a market for all Flash arrays, arrays designed from the ground up to only use Flash that don't even recognize spinning media. And with our Extreme IO acquisition, we're going to have that piece plugged as well with product coming to market next year. So, but the last piece of it is going to be that secret sauce. It's all about the software. And we'll have a software architecture that ties the whole thing together from top to bottom back to the application, and that will be our biggest differentiator.
Great. Well, as I promised, we'd like to allow some time for investor question and answers. And in doing so, we'd like to ask the operators here in the room to start to circulate the microphones. We'd ask investors to please raise your hand, and we'll get the microphone right away over to you. This is your time to ask David Gould, the President, Chief Operating Officer, and Chief Financial Officer, any questions. So please raise your hand if you have a question. Maybe to get things going as we circulate for the first investor question, and there's a couple in the back of the room that we can get the microphones over to right now, and we'll go ahead and start with investor questions, please.
Hi, David. Just wanted to hear your thoughts on, so much has been made about big data in the past few years. When does, Isilon really make it mainstream for, say, just take an example, an organization like Citigroup or like this, and when would you expect to see it massively rolled out across Fortune 1000 companies?
Yeah, sure. So there's a couple of aspects of big data, and Isilon is obviously our storage platform there, and Isilon has historically been positioned for big data applications in places like media and medical imaging and things like that. We have a very major release of the Isilon operating system coming out in the fourth quarter that will basically make it much more applicable to enterprise apps. Things like home directories, file servers have become enormous. And that is a place where you'll see, so really starting next year, we'll start to see a lot of broader Isilon deployment. In terms of making a difference, I mean, we are still on track for the combination of Isilon and Atmos to get to a $1 billion run rate in the second half of this year. And the vast majority of that is coming from Isilon. So Isilon, is now a contributor in a meaningful way. And we think the growth potential is huge for that platform. Then, of course, we've got our software assets on top of that, but I think your question was more about the Isilon platform.
And And just as a follow-up to that, is there a point at which today's traditional file systems become overwhelmed by the size of data and they can no longer handle it, or do you think that they can continue to scale into, you know, multi-petabytes?
Well, I think that's part of the challenge with some of the traditional. It's not so much it's one of the challenges with traditional file systems that maybe have limits of a couple of petabytes or so, is that you wind up with multiple file systems and you get a lot of administrative effort in just juggling data. Just think of filing cabinets. You have to kind of move things from filing cabinet 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And a lot of the traditional file system products have that limitation. With Isilon, right now, we can have a single file system up to 20 petabytes, and then once you put things in, you don't have to worry about all that allocation. You just continue to add those and expand your file system. So this is also one of the huge benefits of Isilon. And what we find is that a number of companies that have, let's say, more than 5 traditional file servers are hitting the wall in terms of what it takes them to manage and administer that, and moving to Isilon is a very attractive alternative. Again, they want more of the enterprise services, security, things like that, which are coming in the Mavericks version of the operating system.
Great. And we have an additional question in the back part.
Yes. Two questions, one on the near term and one on the long term. The near term, are you still comfortable with your $22 billion in revenue for 2012? Are you still expecting R&D tax credit for the full year? And the longer-term question, you had given an initial outlook that $28 billion in revenue in 2014. And could you just give us a puts and takes on those, what kind of drivers you're looking for? Of course, those are the big things, the big data, the cloud, and everything. But when you look at your products, is it going to be the high end that is going to drive, or Symmetrix is going to drive your market, or is it going to be the mid-range which is going to drive the market? In the last quarter, you have a tremendous growth in the scale-out NAS. Do you think that scale-out NAS is going to be the driver in the future? So could you just give a perspective on those things? Thanks.
Okay, sure. Without wanting to fall into the trap of providing mid-quarter updates, which I'm not going to do, obviously, back in July, we did reiterate our confidence in getting to $22 billion and $1.70 of earnings per share. That did assume that the R&D tax credit would be passed later this year, and we still believe that is the case. In terms of the $28 billion, without going into all the details, when we kind of laid that out in February of last year, we actually laid out a number of assumptions in terms of our business segments, which would be growing in single digits, which would be growing in double digits, but less than 20%, which would be in a 20-point-plus growth rate. And we actually laid out which of the businesses would fit in each of those swim lanes. And if you go back, and I'm sure we can get you that material, that kind of lays out those underlying assumptions. We also assumed back then an IT spending environment of in the 5 to 6% range. And obviously right now, this year, things are looking a little less than that. But we'll update you kind of on that whole picture when we do our annual outlook next year.
Additional questions from investors? Maybe if I can go ahead and ask one. You guys recently announced a partnership with Lenovo. Can you update us on the strategic thinking behind that, the roadmap, and just update us on the Lenovo news announcement?
Sure. There are really three parts to that. The first part is that Lenovo will be OEMing and reselling our low-end storage arrays of VNXE and the lower end of the VNX attached to their servers. They have aspirations to be a volume server player, and they want a storage partner to go into the volume markets, starting off in China, moving to APJ, and then to other markets. So it's a good distribution channel for us, number one. Number two, we have an agreement to get basically white box servers back from them for us to build into our future storage products as part of our supply chain. And as you know, a lot of the servers are made in China today anyway, whether they're from Lenovo or anybody else. It's basically just adding an important supply to our supply chain. And the third part of it is that you may remember a few years ago we bought a consumer storage company called iOmega. Well, that company we've put into a joint venture with them, and they are the 51% owner of that JV, and we are the 49% owner. So those are the three pieces of it. But from our point of view, obviously a very important distribution channel, a major player, somebody who can really do well with channel partners and can compete in the volume end of the marketplace. There's been a little bit of confusion as to whether there's any overlap with Cisco, and there really is not, because you know there's no way that Cisco is chasing after the volume server marketplace, and there's no way that Lenovo is chasing after the data center server marketplace. So we have partnerships in both ends of the market.
Great. Any additional investor questions? Please raise your hand and we'll get the microphone to you.
David, could you just talk about, not about the macro, but about the trends taking place at some of your customers? If you look at one of your major competitors, they just reported almost flat terabyte growth year over year, and it was down from the prior quarter. And then you look at a couple of the others, and they were down in their storage revenues. Could you talk about the trends to thin provisioning, to compression, to dedupe, and what that is doing to the overall storage market growth?
Sure. Now, of course, good news is against in the backdrop of those numbers, our storage business grew 7% in the last quarter, so we are seeing growth in our storage business. I think there's always been concern that new storage technologies, whether it be RAID, whether it be network storage, whether it be dedupe, whether it be compression, would actually reduce storage revenue growth and maybe turn it into decline. And I have a different view on that. It's back to my information growth argument. My information growth argument is if information is growing at 60% plus per annum, in order for your storage budget not to increase exponentially, or at least in line with information growth, you need these new technologies. Now, obviously, you get improvements each year from the media supplies, disks become cheaper, solid state become cheaper. That itself is not enough to keep up with storage growth. So you need a combination of the improvements from media as well as the improvements from new technologies like dedupe, compression, things like that, to really keep up with the avalanche of information growth. And I don't think that equation has changed at all. Obviously, you're seeing some of the economic impacts for the year, and the slowdown I mentioned in IT spending impacting certain customers' budgets and people kind of putting off until the future unless they have to buy things, and that happens in a kind of more of a flash environment. But I think that fundamentally, and if you look at all of the industry data from IDC or Gartner or anybody like that, kind of what they project the storage market to do in the future, including the impact of these technologies, it's still going to be a market that's going to grow faster than IT spending for the reasons that I just mentioned.
Great. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this concludes our time here. I want to sincerely thank all of you for joining us. I'm sure you're going to have a quite eventful, long day today. And I personally want to thank EMC for joining us here today. David Goulden, the President, Chief Operating Officer, and Chief Financial Officer of EMC. Thank you very much.
Jim, thank you very much as well. And thank you to all of you.